Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. The St. Louis Art Museum opened a very special exhibit earlier this month. It's a history of American folk art titled Self-Taught Genius, Treasure from the American Folk Art Museum. It features art from the Revolutionary period right up to modern times, and it runs through September 11th. It will likely generate a lot of questions about folk art. We're talking today about what it is and why some say it's underappreciated. Joining me in studio is artist Mitch Hewitt, the owner of Panorama Folk Art and Antiques on Cherokee Street's Antique Row. Mitch, nice to have you with us.
Glad to be here. Thanks.
Well, let's talk a little bit about folk art.
All right.
What distinguishes it from more traditional art?
Really, the umbrella of being self-taught is what mainly distinguishes it from, like, fine art. Folk art, outsider art, there are so many names for it. But, you know, if you stick with those two, folk art and outsider art, is all done by people who really have no art education whatsoever. And outsider artists tend to be kind of on the fringe of society and very, very lightly impacted by society. So what their creations come out looking like is not what you would see from a trained artist.
Is it, as some people have suggested, underappreciated?
I think it's extraordinarily underappreciated. Yeah. I think it's gaining appreciation as we speak. People, I'm finding, are really responding to the rawness, the directness of it, sometimes the naivete of it. There, it has so many qualities because these underappreciated artists, for the most part, create art for themselves. So they're not trying to appeal to any kind of mass audience. If they're lucky, they reach that mass audience. But not all of them do.
Are there any names you can give us of people that people might generally know as being among the top folk artists?
Well, Mose Toliver is one who's very well known. He's one of the sort of the grandfathers of outsider art. S.L. Jones is another one. Some of these might even be in the exhibit at the Art Museum. I personally haven't had a chance to go yet, but I'm chomping at the bit. Richard Burnside is one. Willie Jenks, R.A. Miller, Ronald Cooper. There are so many. Henry Darger. A lot of these people, too, that you can see up in Chicago at the Intuit.
How about Mitch Hewitt?
I wouldn't say that I'm up on the level of a Mose Toliver, but I do my best.
So what would make them outstanding in their field?
You know what? A lot of it is not only is it the image. The funny thing about folk and outsider art is that a lot of it is tied to their histories and their stories. Especially in outsider art, a lot of that creation comes from pain, and it comes from bad situations economically, education level, just, you know, things that have happened to these people, and they, as a result, express themselves in any way that they want to, and it's very striking.
And it's called Uniquely American. Is it that?
No.
Okay, so let's not call it that then.
No, it is not uniquely American at all. It's actually the worldwide approach to outsider art, for the most part, is really gaining perspective. There's a magazine out there. It's an international magazine called Raw Vision, and it really kind of – if you ever get your hands on that, that's a good one because it talks about – outsider art, art brut, from all over the world. And I know Japan right now is becoming pretty big in that field.
Outsider art, I want to just be clear on this, is your term for folk art?
Well, no. Okay, folk art really kind of is just anybody who's self-taught. Outsider art tends to be those people who have not been impacted by society. You know, people who live in circumstances where they're not confronted by the media at every turn. They tend to not have a lot of education. They tend to be economically challenged. And their art tends to be much rawer than just a self-taught folk artist.
What do you mean by raw?
Well, like in the case of Mose Tolliver, he worked at like a factory or something and then had an accident and couldn't work anymore. So he started painting these images on found wood with house paint and hanging them up in the trees in his yard. Okay, and they tended to be like really simple, really, really primitive self-portraits and pictures of fruit and these women that he called scooter girls. And they were very, very simple but very impactful. Some of them tended to be a little erotic, although he would never admit to that, which is kind of a funny thing about him. And so they're very direct. Some of them are autobiographical. There's nothing really pretty about outsider art for the most part.
What kind of prices can some of this art command? I mean, we hear what I would call outrageous prices for some of the, from some of the masters. What about folk artists?
It depends on the folk artist. We have a local folk artist here by the name of Teresa Disney. You may have heard of her. She's been around for a long time. She spends about half of her time now in Florida because that's down in the South, and that's sort of the home of folk art. She also lives here in St. Louis, and she has really come up in prices and has come up in the folk art world where her pieces, you know, can command, you know, several thousand dollars. Now, some of these names that I've mentioned and some of the people that are in this exhibit at the Art Museum, like Mary Smith, you're talking $10,000, $20,000 and up.
Obviously, we're not talking about just paintings. I mean, you mentioned things hanging from the trees. Obviously, this is a painting of some sort. But there are other I understand quilts, for instance, are part of the picture, and other sculpture, that sort of thing.
Anything that you can think of.
Yeah.
Yeah. The G's Ben, there was a G's Ben exhibit here a few years ago of quilts, and that was a small southern town, and those were just fabulous. So, you know, that's sort of the cream of the crop for quilts, but there are a lot of people who do sculptures. My partner, Tommy Lawless, does sculptures out of found objects. So it's like wooden boxes and kitchen implements and bottle caps and, you know, whatever fits in with what image he's trying to create.
That's not Tom Lawless, the former baseball player,
no.
Is it?
No, yeah. No, I'm afraid it isn't.
What about your own specialty? From what I've seen at your website, it's a little bit different.
Yeah, my paintings tend to be just kind of color saturated and simple and direct. I try to paint on found wood because I find that when you work with objects that already had a life, we don't know what that life is, but I mean, you know, it just brings a little bit more soul and a little bit more energy to it. I also create these creatures called the Misunderstoods, which are made out of old scratchy wool blankets, and they tend to be a little bit odd, but I've had a lot of fun doing that.
What brought you into this particular genre as opposed to going someplace else with your artistic talents?
Well, we've had our business, Panorama Folk Art and Antiques, for 26 years down on Cherokee Street. We started out doing mid-century stuff, which is really big now, but we always seem to miss the boat. we started out doing mid-century, and then we kind of morphed into different things. And being in the antique business, you are confronted regularly with things that people made. And I've always been drawn to anything that someone made with their own hands, and especially if they weren't trained to do so. If they just had a whim to make something and really didn't know how to make it, but they made it anyway. The soul that comes out of that and the energy that comes off of that is astounding.
I hate to say it, but it sounds to me like sometimes it can be pretty awful too in terms of what the heck is this?
Well, there's a lot of mystery.
Yeah.
Which is, in my opinion, one of the best things about art. I think if art doesn't have mystery, it doesn't really pique my interest.
Uh-huh. What can people find at your place?
Well, they can find a lot of classic folk and outsider artists, like I mentioned, Mose Tolliver and S.L. Jones and Willie Jenks. They can find some current artists that are doing work, you know, now. We have Carol Roll, who does these wonderful hand-formed papier-mâché figures that have a real nostalgic look. She's out of Florida. We have John Fries, who's doing some great papier-mâché pieces. We've got a guy by the name of Big Joe McCaug out of Michigan that is a self-taught, once again, carver and creates these wonderful things out of wood. We have Sybil Taylor, who's a local artist, does sort of aboriginal drawings that depict some painful moments. We have Charlie Fry, who's out of, I think, North or South Carolina, does some great things. We have Hoke and T. Marie Nolan, who are artists from Hannibal. And they actually work in Hannibal, and they live in a church.
We only have a few seconds left, but it sounds like St. Louis is making its presence felt in the folk art world.
Yes. If I had enough space, there would be so much more as far as local artists are concerned. But, you know, I only have so much, so I try to keep it rotated.
I hope we've whet the appetite of listeners to investigate folk art a little bit more. We'll put a link to your website on our website at stlpublicradio.org. People can become better acquainted with it.
That's right.
Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Very, very interesting to hear about folk art. Mitch is the owner, and he is an artist, at Panorama Folk Art and Antiques on Cherokee Street.
That's right.
Road. Thanks. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Archive versions of past St. Louis On the Air programs are available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org/stlonair. St. Louis On the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thanks so much for listening. I'm Don Marsh.